There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday, and lots to do. And reminder, too, you can check us out through the new FM Talk 106.5 app, available at the App Store or Google Play. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit. Also coming up on today's show, we'll continue to get to know the candidates as we move forward to that August 24th date for Mobile's municipal election. So that's in the mix as well. And speaking of which, a man that watches this stuff like a hawk perched high above the city council from Lanyap, my buddy Dale Leash is going to join us this hour. Hey, Dale.
Hey.
Like a hawk. Perched high.
Or osprey. Or
osprey, yes.
Pelican. I think I'm more of a pelican.
you come down on the council with a huge mouth open and grab a bunch of water and council people and then sort it out in your gullet?
Yeah. I got a big mouth and a big stomach. Yeah, it makes sense.
All right, Latsu, thanks for being here. I want to kind of run through, first of all, yeah, I mentioned that I continue, like you have, bringing the candidates lined up in the municipal elections to the folks. And maybe recently there's been more, but it just strikes me as being an extremely busy field here in city council races and the mayor's race.
Yeah, busy is a word for it. I don't exciting. I don't know if we're there yet, but it's definitely been a busy cycle, and it's going to get busier as we get closer to the qualification deadline.
Yeah. So when do they have to be in for sure?
The 20th.
Okay, so the 20th, you know, at that point, I mean, but we've had some this week. I mean, like Jason Caffey's announcement earlier this week.
Yeah, Jason Caffey, the, you know, former NBA star who's from here, has jumped into District 2. So that's six candidates in District 2. We're up to four candidates in District 5, at least four candidates in District 4. Three or four candidates in District 6. I mean, there's multiple candidates in every race except District 3 that I know of.
You know, and some of these where you have, you know, they're running just for the seat, right? There's no incumbent. People are stepping down is one thing. But District 2 is interesting that it's so busy because, you know, you've got LaVon Mansey in there. And, I mean, there's so many challengers.
Well, and keep in mind, LaVon didn't have any challengers last time. So four
right.
years ago, he ran unopposed. So, you know, for him to have five challengers now does seem odd, considering he had no challengers before. And I think part of it is I think folks maybe see an opportunity given his you know, some of his health issues. Given the fact that, you know, he's been bound to a wheelchair now, at least for now. Now I've talked to him about these issues and he's, you know, he says that he plans to be around for another 40 years. So nothing's like imminent, but that's probably got to be a consideration. I think a lot of it too is, he was at higher risk of COVID-19 than maybe others would be, so you didn't see him quite as much out and about during the pandemic, and I think a lot of people have used that against him. So I think that has kind of all come together as sort of a kind of an invitation to challengers to this is your chance.
You know, it is I don't think you're off the mark on it, but it is interesting that, something like a perceived physical weakness would bring out more challengers.
And it may not be all of that. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are upset with his, some of his decisions. You know, keep in mind, the pandemic also had, you know, put limitations on restaurants and things like that. And he's a council member for downtown. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they may not be 100% happy with some of the results that he has generated as their representative. But I think it's a combination of things. Sure, he's done things people didn't like. I know Reggie Hill, who's running against him, for instance, brought up the fact that he used some of the CIP money for, you know, for housing renovations in District 2. And Reggie doesn't believe that that's how the CIP money should be used. So it's stuff like that. You know, there's going to be, you're going to have stuff like that in every race, but it seems like it's been more pronounced in District 2.
I want to get back into, we'll get into some current council talk in just a second. I do want to shift to the mayoral race here. And if you have any, are you hearing anything that anybody else would get in other than Richardson and Finley and Stimson?
We've talked about it before, Sean. I think it's very unlikely now that you're going to hear anybody that's a legitimate contender coming in this late. I mean, you had Fred Richardson announce a year before the election that he was in. You had, Municipal Judge Carlos Finley come in close to the first of the year, and then I think Sandy's been officially in for re-election since February. So, at this point, you're so far behind in fundraising, you're so far behind in just name recognition, getting your name out there, that unless it's a huge, huge candidate, I don't think you're going to see any legit contenders. Vying for that seat. Do I think that you're going to see some other candidates? Possibly, but nobody that I think has a realistic shot.
I'll say it. I mean, I'm not the journalist here. Novelty candidates. Sometimes we have novelty candidates get in right at the end. Like, oh, look, I'm running. Sure you are.
And to be honest with you, some of those candidates are good for the newspaper business. I'm not going to lie to you.
But how about the radio business?
I'm trying to be more polite. Yeah. I'm trying to be more polite.
They're fantastic for us. Yeah, so we encourage, Dale and I encourage you to get in. Go ahead and make
Please.
That qualifying. We need you to get in the mix. All right.
And let Dale at lanyatmobile.com know. That's my email. Yeah.
And Sean, spelled the fast way, at fmtalk1065.com, no, as well. As we talk about current council, which is, I mean, there's been a little bit of some proxy mayoral campaigning going on there as well. But I want to get to one of the stories you have right now, and people can check out over at lanyatmobile.com about the city and Bishop State Community College unveiling a program to help supplier diversity. But this kind of, and I want to get to that, but this kind of gets into a discussion about pushback that the Stimson administration is getting about how to use the Relief Act money, that there are people saying that they don't like the way it was laid out, and they had some questions there. Has that gone anywhere? Where are we with that? Business owners saying.
Okay. I think that there's going to be more community. There's going to be more discussions with the council about it before anything gets decided. I'm not sure what the date is, but I think there's another committee meeting about it. So I think you're going to hear more about what's happening. You know, I think the most recent thing that happened while I was on vacation was that the gun violence initiative, I think it was ShotSpotter, that they were going to invest in with some of that money. And then
there's a group out there that just disagrees with
for city employees. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that a group, and I think it's majority black-owned businesses that had said, hey, hold up, we don't like, you know, the way this is. There's not enough money going to certain areas of town and to black-owned businesses or their areas. So I just didn't know where that stood.
And when you look at COVID relief money, I mean, a rational person might say that, you know, a lot of the businesses, both in white and black parts of town, were adversely impacted by COVID. And you can say whatever you want to about COVID and that kind of things and mask mandates. But the fact of the matter is, you know, consumer confidence, consumers being able to go out and you know, give these businesses their money was impacted by things that were out of these business owners' control. So it would make sense that some of that money might go to businesses that were impacted. And the city's already done that a little bit, but, you know, you could always use more, I guess. So you could make that argument, and it's a pretty rational argument to be made. I think the mayor's fact saying basically the city itself did okay during COVID because of, you know, savings and whatnot. So let's use this opportunity to expand some of the things we're already doing.
Let's talk about this as well. One of your stories up posted this week, the city and Bishop State Community College unveiling a program to help supplier diversity. What is supplier? Is it like vendors to the city, or who are we talking about?
Well, that was primarily the crux of it. So you're talking about people, you're talking about businesses that are, and I'm going to say especially disadvantaged business enterprises, which you'll hear from time to time at the city council meeting referred to as DBEs. They're black-owned, woman-owned, and I think by the federal standards, maybe even veteran-owned businesses that are usually considered to be have a harder time than businesses owned by white males at being able to compete for government contracts. So this would just basically help some of these businesses compete. And it's a free set of classes. I think there's 20 spots per class at Bishop State. It starts later this month, and it's a 6-month course. And basically, it's going to try to give these business owners an opportunity to learn more about how to get better involved in city contracts. And you know, the city has a suggestion or requires that a best effort be made to include DBEs on 15% of all city contracts. The interpretation of that and how that's been used in the past has been widely debated at city council meetings between the mayor's office and the city council. But by and large, that is a requirement to make the best effort to get minority businesses on these contracts. So this is just another step to kind of enhance that, according to the mayor.
Well, and it's good to have, if there's a course here and it can tell people, you know, because I don't know how these contracts are, but I've dealt with some federal government things. It's like Byzantine filling out the forms. But doesn't it boil down to the bid and the bet? I mean, so these disadvantaged business enterprises, if they come in and learn, you know, hey, here's how you do it, here's all the different things you got to do, I think that's good. But doesn't it just come down to when they're bidding contracts, who has the best price on the job? I mean, whether it be architectural engineering or housing development.
I'm about to educate everybody on that. Yeah, theoretically, the idea that the lowest bid always wins, but it's not just strictly the lowest bid. It's the lowest. What's the state terminology? Because it's the lowest appropriate bid or something of that nature. Okay. So I'm paraphrasing. And appropriate has a wide definition. So if the city wanted to come in and say the appropriate bid for this contract, they have to be local and they have to be minority owned, they could do that and say this is the most appropriate bid. That's
really
why we chose it, even though it's higher than others. Yeah, absolutely.
So wouldn't,
absolutely.
I mean, I could
that
understand
comes,
if you went into
from the League of Municipalities. Yeah.
Okay, because I mean, the way I thought about it, if I came in on appropriate, the way I kept, or whatever their term is, I always thought like,
I don't know, I can't remember what the term is off the top of my head, but
I know what you're talking about. I do know what you're talking about. But if you came in and like, say, you know, Leash Construction, right? And you've got a ton of equipment, you've been doing this for a long time, you know how to do it, you have a track record of doing it right, and I'm over there with my pickup, right? And we're both bidding, and I've never done the job before, and I might be a few dollars less than. They may look at you and go, yeah, but look at this person. They got the equipment. They know how to do it. They have a track record. But you're saying it's not that.
It could be that too.
It doesn't negate that, but you can make it to where you can say the bid has to come from someone local and someone from a minority community or whatever. And if that bid is more, then it still will win because of those other exceptions.
And And the bid laws also don't apply to professional services, and so that definition is also pretty wide. But basically, like any engineering design stuff like that, doesn't necessarily have to be the lowest bid or even lowest qualified bid. So there's a lot of wiggle room in that state law. But as far as the city goes, they have to make the best effort to get a minority contractor based on federal standards to be 15% of a project. And for the most part, what that includes is like they'll ask a contractor they've used a lot to, hey, just get some subcontractors that are owned by a minority business and just make sure it's 15% of the 15% of the money is going to them. That'll count. So, but this is supposed to help get everybody kind of on the same page, kind of level the playing field a little bit.
Yeah, and people have texted in here, qualified bids or lowest responsible bid. Maybe that's the term.
That's what it is. That's what it is. And that term is more widely defined than people might think.
All right, coming right back. More with Dale Leash with Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Got a few more questions, and we'll talk about how you can get signed up for Lanyap. Well, today, we'll do that when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And phone line, text line, 343-0106. I want you all to check in and say hello to my buddy, Larry Kirby at LCM Motor Cars. And let's talk some inventory, Larry.
Absolutely. And it's growing daily. So we're getting the vehicles in. Matter of fact, we've got drivers going to pick up five more, the mix of trucks and SUVs. So they'll be here later on today.
All right, let's talk about financing options here in the summertime. Are they all still working? They still got the deals?
Everybody's still got the deals. As a matter of fact, we're getting great deals done. We had a first-time buyer the day before yesterday. Had limited credit but good job experience. We got him 3%.
Cha-ching. I love it. And you've talked about that, too, that, you know, when you start talking about a half percentage or percentage point here, people are like, well, what big a difference does that make? And you look at it for a life of a loan, and it can mean a lot of money.
It can mean at least hundreds and a lot of times thousands of dollars savings over the length of the contract.
Well, let's get people out there to check out the inventory and talk financing. Give them directions.
Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Please like us on Facebook or just call us 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
All right, Larry Kirby checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Continue our conversation with Dale Leash from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Dale, bring us up to date on the story of the shooting at Senator Figure's house here. You know, I thought about this. I was talking earlier in the week about that gunshot detection technology you mentioned earlier, and I was like, Right. Well, there would have been a good place to have it. What do we know now? What's MPD saying?
I mean, there's not a whole lot of updates, unfortunately. My latest story came out in the Wednesday edition of Lanyap, and it's very short. But basically, you know, there were 11 shots into her house. No one was home at the time, so there were no injuries or anything like that. And police aren't saying much else except that they're currently working to, I don't know how to say it. I guess what I'm saying is they're trying to figure out, basically run down leads try to prove that it's not politically motivated. I think I may have said that wrong yesterday morning, but I don't think that they think that it's politically motivated. They don't think it's random, but they're trying to work right now. Public Safety Director Lawrence Petit said they're running down leads based on the fact that it's politically motivated to kind of prove that it's not at this point, but they don't have any other, I don't have any other information from them on what exactly it means.
Hey, I mean, that's some third world kind of stuff. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And to have it as a state senator's house, it really stood out to me when it happened. And I hope we get some answers here soon.
And I think we will, and I think you're going to see. I don't think the media is going to forget about it. So I think you're going to see us and others report on it as details become more available.
All right, tell folks how you talked about the on the street, how they pick up the actual physical newsprint stuff there for Lanyap, and then let's talk about that hot new online stuff as well.
Yeah, you know, we're pretty much since the COVID outbreak, we're pretty much only distributing, with a few exceptions, to our purple boxes around town. You can't miss them. You should be able to spot them from the street. They're purple. They're nice. Regal even. And so look out for our boxes. We've got a map on our website on the about us section that has all of our distribution points. So if you, you know, if you can't find one, that'll help you out, or you can always call us. We, you know, we won't talk bad about you behind your back too badly.
Good deal. I have about 15 seconds left. So the website, where do they go?
Website, lanyardmobile.com. Click the subscribe button to subscribe. We'd love to have the support.
Thank you. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And, yeah, a reminder, the brand-new FM Talk 106.5 app waiting for you. If you're an Android user like I am, you can go check it out at the Google Play Store. Or if you're on that iPhone thing that's so popular with the kids out there, just go to the App Store, iTunes, and look for FMTALK 1065. No point between the 6 and 5. You'll see our logo, download that, and it is a... waiting for you and ready to go. The app right there, free. And you can one button call the station. You can text the station. Use the talkback feature to leave us a message. But also, of course, the streaming that's there anytime. And the podcast, 55 hours a week of live local programming from FM Talk 106.5, available in podcast form right there on the app. That's the tip of the iceberg. So check out the app today and let us know what you think. All right, you know, and I was in a conversation with Dale Leash from Lanyap in the first half of this hour about the Mobile municipal elections coming up August 24th. And you've got mayoral and city council. And we mentioned District 2. And how I call it busy, you know, it seems to me, obviously throughout the districts, it's very busy, but two stands out to me. And Mark Minert is joining us. He is running in District 2, and we'll get to know him right now. Hey, thanks for being here.
Hey, Sean, thanks for having me.
So this is a seat, and some of the seats that where somebody's stepping down, like in a six or something like that, I get it, but in two, you have Councilman Manzi is running as the incumbent, but you and quite a few others are challenging him here. What drove you to that? Was it something you always wanted to do, to run for District 2, or what happened?
You know, Sean, over the past few years, it just feels like downtown and the historic districts have just been somewhat neglected. And, you know, we have tried time and time again to get some simple things addressed, and they just haven't been. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I'm just tired of seeing a lot of short-sighted decisions that come out of city council, and it was just time for me to try to make a change.
Okay, so like a short-sighted decision that they've made, give us an example. What would be one of those?
Well, you know, a prime example is something that we're debating online right now is for the residents downtown. You have the business areas have things like street sweepers, litter maintenance, those things. But in the residential areas, there's nobody that addresses that. So there are large residential areas. I can tell you right now, the last time my street was swept was in October 2019.
Wow. Okay.
Right. And the reason I know the specific date is the only time the street gets swept is whenever there's the witch's ride through downtown. That I could live with. You know, I don't need to have my street swept. I can clean my own street. Except for there are areas where you'll have a business section on one side of the street and a residential section on the other side of the street, and they will literally sweep the trash and debris from one side of the street in the business district to the other side of the street in the residential district and then leave.
So wait, so the sweeper comes down, we got to picture this street being split in half with people going one way, people going the other, and they come down one side and sweep all that stuff over to the other side and then don't come back?
Right, they only sweep half the street. They sweep the business side and push it to the residential side and then leave.
Y'all, what you're describing right here, this is true city council politics. I'll give you a commendation on that. This is, you know, often I'll have people come in and talk to me about things that aren't to the core, to the quick of city council politics. But that, Mark, is the right kind of subject to talk about. That's because that's the kind of stuff that leaves people scratching their heads, standing in their front yards.
Exactly. And then there are other issues. You know, of course, annexation, you know, was talked about widely 2 years ago. You know, at the start of this campaign, it was a hotly debated topic, but I think that has kind of fallen by the news cycle. But that was another example. This was an opportunity for the city to really increase its revenues, to increase its budget so that we could have more money to address both police and things like homelessness, fire protection, and animal control. And it was voted down for what I believe to be largely political reasons.
Yeah, let's get into that. And to remind folks who haven't followed our discussion, once again, the council was just voting on the right of referendum. They weren't voting to annex in. They were voting to let these people vote to come in. That was blocked. And one of the excuses, and I agree with you that it was for political reasons, but one of the excuses was given is we can't annex in new parts of the city until we take care of the city we have. What's your response to that argument?
So these are areas right now are areas that we're largely taking care of, and they actually require less maintenance. These are newer areas that have been developed with modern construction methods, modern construction of the streets, sidewalks. So there is actually a net gain in the tax revenue. So the argument that I've heard is we've got to develop the city from within. We can't look to expand out. But essentially what we would be doing here is erasing this imaginary line on a map and moving it to where most people think the line already is, which is the Schillinger Road. So it's not really going to cost us much. We get up the additional tax revenue, and that'll help us develop those the inner areas, your Africatown, your campground, and other areas where we're trying to fund some redevelopment. So I don't see how this prevents that. I don't see how moving this imaginary line prevents us from further development of our inner city.
Yeah, because I've seen some of the stats that rolled out during the annexation debate that even without, and I know you'll probably want to bring in the discussions of what it would mean to be seen as a bigger city, I mean, you know, to have the numbers and what it means for grant money, but that it was a net gain even without that, right? That there was those areas that if they did vote to be annexed in would bring in more money than they cost. Is that a fair assessment?
Exactly. And, you know, the numbers I've looked at have said, anywhere from $2.2 million a year in sales tax. After 5 years, you're talking about $1.5 million in property tax, ancillary taxes, federal grants, state grants that are based off of total population. So there's a lot of costs that are coming out of that. And, you know, the annexation isn't the only thing. We have to think of the city's budget as basically a big pie. I always use pie graphs whenever I'm discussing budget because you got to take it from somewhere to pay for something else. So if we, you know, there's a lot of people who complain, especially in District 2, about, like, speeding and sidewalk issues. Well, we don't have enough money to fund both projects. We don't have enough money to fund both the police and, you know, infrastructure. So we need to make that pie bigger so that there is enough money. And that's going to come from additional revenue. Some of that's going to come from annexation. Some of that needs to come from increased tourism. There are going to be a lot of factors. But we do need to realize that we have to adequately fund our city, especially if there's an economic downturn, which it looks like there's probably going to be some type of event happen in the next year, year and a half, 2 years. We already have interest rates are going to go up. There's already cost of living indexes are going up. I think Social Security is doing about a 5.1% living index. So we need to prepare for that. And I just don't feel like we've taken those steps to adequately prepare for what happens when there's the next economic downturn.
And what about the individual money in, you know, in the different districts? So CIP money, do you think it should be allocated evenly between all the districts, or do you think you should have it moved to which district needs the, you know, like that sea change kind of project in a given fiscal year?
So I do believe that the older areas need more maintenance. I don't think that we're going to be able to get the city council to all agree to do that. So I really don't think it's plausible, although I do believe that that is something I would like to see.
Hey, I've got, if just joining us, talking to Mark Minert. He's a local realtor running for Mobile City Council District 2. Question on the text line here. My understanding is the property tax increase is delayed if those areas annex in.
Yeah, so we can't can't start collecting the property taxes in those areas for 5 years. So that's why I said after 5 years, we'll get about $1.5 million in property tax. So if you look at the annexation map, it looks like this gerrymandered map. And that makes sense. So the areas they went after were primarily the commercial areas. And just we're talking about, we want to make sure that if we do do an annexation, that it has a net positive return, meaning that we're automatically paying more or receiving more income than we're putting out. Otherwise, so that's why we kind of went around, you know, you look at those areas, they're kind of designed around the commercial areas, so we can go ahead and start collecting those sales taxes. And then after we've collected those for a few years, once the property taxes come in, then you can start to annex more area because, again, we're still trying to maintain that net positive return. So that's, yes, they're right, that we cannot accept the property taxes on it for 5 years, which is kind of the theory behind the gerrymandering lines.
Very good. People want to get more information about your campaign. Where do they go?
So my website is markformobile.com, or you can email me at markformobile@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. So, again, either look for Mark Minnert, that's M-I-N-N-A-E-R-T, or look for Mark for Mobile, F-O-R, Mobile. And you'll find me. I've got a lot of information out there, and I'm anxious to speak to anybody that has any questions.
Hey, I appreciate your time with us today. Thank you very much, and best of luck out there.
Hey, thanks, Sean. It was a pleasure to be here, and hope to be back on again.
All right, very good. Mark Minnert, our guest, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile right here at FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back to FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you here. Say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry, and let's talk some precious metals and some gift ideas. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, man, how you doing today?
I'm good. So as we close out the week, gold and silver, how are we looking?
They've actually been creeping up a little bit. Gold is hovering a little over $1,800. Silver is hovering a little over $26 an ounce. And we just any day now are expecting those new 2021 Type 2 Silver Eagles to come in. So that's actually been generating a lot of excitement here at the shop. Now,
a Type 2 Silver Eagle, explain.
So the U.S. Mint Congress decided they were going to change the design on the American Silver Eagle, and they were going to do that as of the end of last year. And, of course, as anything the government touches, they screw it up. That is not happening until the middle of this year. So since they had a Type 1 at the beginning of the year, and then they're changing the design halfway through the year, now you have a Type 1 and a Type 2. You could not do a clean break like a normal person would. They had to mess it up.
Okay, but those are coming in soon.
Yes, sir. Any day now. They were supposed to have shipped 2 days ago. I am just anxiously waiting for those to arrive.
That's a great gift item, obviously, and also for collectors. But that's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to silver, artistic silver. We could call it that way, right?
Well, so many different things we have here in the shop, and some of them you don't expect it to be as cool looking as it is. We just got in those Tetris silver coins the other day with St. Basil's Cathedral on the one side. I'm assuming it's St. Basil, not St. Basil, but you know, who knows. And then the Tetris design on the other, really cool. Who would have thought a video game coin would look really cool? But it's really impressive. And that's just one of hundreds of different things we've got here at the shop.
And we often talk about the open-L knives. How's your stock looking on those?
Looking good. We had another order come in just the other day, so we got all of those restocked. Got some more of those gray limited edition ones that you liked so much. And those, believe it or not, have one more order on the way. We've sold almost $1,000 worth of open-Ls within the last couple of days.
That's good, because y'all are getting some great knives out there. Not only the individual knives. I love those for gift ideas, those knife kits. Or I don't know how I call them a kit. There may be a fancier word for it.
The kitchen set or the kit. They came out with a new one. It's a three-piece set. Polymer handle, stainless steel blade. And it's more of a kitchen prep knife set. So if it's something you end up leaving out by the barbecue overnight, maybe you left it outside overnight, it's going to be fine.
There you go. If people are checking out all those items and a whole lot more, how do they find you?
We're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. Of course, online, mobilebaycoins.com. Or they can check out the podcast at twoguysandsomechange.com if they miss us right here on 106.5 every Tuesday evening.
Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good weekend, Sean.
Hey, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. By the way, too, programming note, coming up at the 1 o'clock hour, I have a family issue to attend to, so we will giving you a show from earlier in the week. Part of it will be a show from earlier in the week, my conversation with Cameron Smith. That'll start a little after 1 o'clock. All right, a couple odds and ends items here. First of all, where is the dang story? It moves around on me. All right. So Blue Angels flying this weekend. You know that. You heard the update from Devin there in the news. So that's happening. So if you go by boat, that's one thing. Looks like the forecast is okay for tomorrow. If you go by truck, well, I guess it's still you could do it here. You just can't do it in North Carolina. And your truck is squatted. You get a ticket if you're in North Carolina. You know what I'm talking about? That thing that drives me crazy, that Carolina squat we've talked about on the show where the truck looks like it's hauling either an incredibly heavy load of lead in the bed or it's hauling a very heavy trailer, but it's all invisible, you know, where the truck is squatted on the back. Okay, so story coming out of North Carolina, which makes sense, right? If it's called the Carolina squat, although they say if you're in Tennessee, it's called the Tennessee tilt. North Carolina House of Representatives has passed a new bill that outlaws a popular vehicle modification known as the Carolina Squat. This is House Bill 692, specifically modifies the standard North Carolina vehicle code to ban vehicle suspension modifications that simultaneously lift up the front of the vehicle and lower the back of the vehicle. Okay, so if your mod is to lift up the front and lower the back, you could be in violation. If this passes, it's House Bill 692. It has not passed yet. It says a private passenger automobile shall not be modified or altered by elevating the automobile more than 3 inches from the manufacturer's specific height in the front and lowering the automobile by more than 2 inches from the manufacturer's specific height in the rear. So you can still do a lift and you can still do a lower, right? So if you're mini trucker guy, which, by the way, I used to make fun of the mini lowered trucks out there, but I don't anymore because they're the ones who will never get their catalytic converter stolen because nobody's skinny enough to get under their vehicle. And lifting trucks that I understand, those are okay. But if you lift the front and lower the back, if this passes in North Carolina, the Carolina squat will be against the law in Carolina. Several North Carolina House members believe the vehicle modification makes ordinary headlights appear as high beams during normal driving conditions. I will agree with that. Endangering both oncoming motorists and pedestrians due to decreased visibility. That's the other thing. When I've seen these squatted trunks, y'all, you kids are driving up and down the road. I go, how the heck if you have somebody walk out in front? You're not seeing. It's going to be like 15 yards before you can see looking out at your windshield. So this is not an Alabama thing, but there at the namesake, right? The eponymous Carolina squat, they are looking at it in North Carolina. House Bill 692, we'll keep our eyes on it. Now, no word if anything's come up in Tennessee where they call it the Tennessee tilt. What do we call it here? I mean, because I call it Carolina squat here, as I learned from y'all. But if Tennessee doesn't call it Carolina squat, they call it the Tennessee tilt. What do we have an Alabama name for it? Is there a... Don says, what do we call it here in Alabama? Yeah, I don't know. He said, I call it a blown motor. These idiots not realize what it does to the engine when there's no oil running through. Don, let them keep running it. Let's see. Buddy says it looks like a dog dragging its butt. That's true. Jason says it looks like a dog ate a jalapeno pepper. Daniel, dog dragging a lot of dogs dragging the butts here. Oh, and Sean, you're right. Sean says, don't forget the Instagram handle on the back window. Yeah, that's another thing I have seen. Many of those, they'll have like, so you can go, I guess, go follow their Instagram when you see how squatted their vehicle is. Well, that's a North Carolina House bill, not an Alabama House bill. We'll see if that gets pre-filed. Hey, budding politicians out there, elected officials, want to get some attention going into this next legislative session. Y'all pre-file you a bill about the Carolina squad. Come up with the Alabama term. Chuck says Alabama idiots. Yes, but that's not as good as Carolina squad or Tennessee tilt, Chuck. We got to find something catchier. And then let the politicians pre-file some bill to make it against the law. Maybe it's just driving around looking foolish. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But so there you go. Just know that the days may be numbered, at least in North Carolina, on this, and we'll keep our eyes on the story. All right. Also, a reminder, tomorrow, Roy Barton Young Anglers Tournament. And then coming up a week from yesterday, week from yesterday. It's the Captain T-Bone Liars Contest at the rodeo. Be one of the judges down there. They're always nice to ask me to be part of that every year, and I hope to see y'all down there as well. So kids tournament coming up tomorrow. Remember, you can take the kids fishing, then come in and buy the ticket once you catch the fish, which kind of works, you know, when you got kids on the boat, I understand. And then next week, of course, the Liars Contest and the 88th Annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo gets kicked off on Dolphin Island, 5 o'clock on Friday morning. All right, so we'll do all that. All right, conversation with Cameron Smith from earlier this week on the way. I'll talk to y'all tomorrow morning for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.